Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Kamau, Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 775. NASDAQ Futures down 350. A little bit of a disparity there, but not much. Market looks, the screen looks fairly green. Dow Futures up 122. That's probably why. The entire Dow stock's up here. IBM's up 205. We've got, what else? That's about the only one. Apple's up 26 cents. Home Depot up 70 cents. Mr. Greg, what's going to happen with this article here saying that vodka and soda now is considered gay water?
I don't know if it gets the job done.
What is that all about?
I think your insides don't really discriminate.
I'm just kind of curious. What's that going to do to vodka sales?
I don't think it'll affect it much.
Look what happened to what beer was it?
Well, there was an issue.
Bud Light.
Bud Light had with a celebrity influencer that really hammered their sales specifically, but I believe Modelo was the beneficiary of that dip in Bud Light. So, I mean, the same company in the U.S. at least benefited from, you know,
Modelo
one going
U.S.
down.
Company.
The distribution rights are different in different countries, but I think in the U.S. Modelo is. What's it called? InBev.
All right. Well, yeah, InBev and they own everything, pretty much.
So, you know, one goes down, the other goes up. As long as you own both.
I'm kind of curious how a light beer would go down and a non-light beer would go up on something like that.
Well,
seems like kind of a couple of different markets, but maybe not.
Yeah. In general, I think if vodka goes down, you'll see an increase in whatever other brand they have, and
they call them the Browns.
The Browns. I mean, for me, it's a little hot for whiskey, but you know, whatever.
I wandered in downstairs last week in the Emporium, the bar in our building. I can't get over how much there must have been some company having a little party in there, and some of the ladies walking by with about, I'm going to say, 20 shots of something tequila, probably on a tray.
Yeah, tequila.
$12 a throw for those little plastic shots, that's a deal.
Nah. Doesn't seem like a deal. It seems like highway robbery. But, when one goes down, usually the other goes up in whatever you lost in the other. I mean, you just need to figure out where the demand is. So if vodka is going down, probably gin. I don't know, maybe something.
Gin's been sneaking up a little bit. This is from my creatures in the industry.
I mean, really, tequila is very expensive. So in an environment,
it's real hot though.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising to me, but
It moves around because I know one of her best friends and a friend of mine. She used to be on the trading floor. She's been working for she was with the Romano Brothers and then their successor, and they had for a while it was Bacardi was the number one seller. When everybody was rum and coke, that might have been before your time, but rum and coke was the hottest thing.
Yeah, I mean,
and then that became the gin was never that big, but Bacardi became real big. Then it was Absolut was huge forever.
And now people are adding. I don't think you can sell them together, but you can add booze to those THC infused drinks, and you know supposedly that's the new trend. So. A whole new dimension of getting twisted.
Well, you know, yeah, there's always new dimensions, but yeah, then it became the Browns, and the weird part of it is I don't drink it that much, but I've always liked a good bourbon or rye or something. And it's funny. The problem with that is if vodka becomes hot, you can make vodka pretty fast. But if whiskey all of a sudden becomes hot...
Yeah, there's a huge delay.
There's a huge delay. But now the delay is getting smaller and smaller to the point where all these really high-priced bourbons you'll see on the top shelf, when I go in Myers on a Sunday morning, you can't even buy them, right?
Right.
It's before 11 o'clock. So, but I look at a couple of new brands, and I just they don't even tell you how old it is anymore. Because it's like, it's got to be at least 4 years, right, if it says bourbon?
No.
I think it does.
No.
The word bourbon, it has to be from some counties in Kentucky, and it has to at least start out there. I think it has to be 4 years. It's something like that. I don't know.
The corn with Kentucky, I think it's the percentage of corn.
But I think there's something to be called. My brother knows all this, but
we can put it up in the show notes.
Yeah, but now it's what they do is because I think the best one I ever tasted was Whistle Pig. It was a 12-year-old rye, and it's made in New Hampshire or someplace, somewhere out in New England. And I'm sitting there, okay, how do you increase the volume of Whistle Pig? And sure enough, they've got something out there. I know that's 6 years, but my brother says you put it in the oaken barrels, and the idea takes that long, if you really want the high-end stuff, to essentially take the taste of the charcoal in the barrel or whatever.
Charred oak barrels.
Yeah, so what you end up doing is you get some oak chips and you sprinkle them in the bottom, and it increases the surface area. So the taste comes in a lot. You might have, because you can put in, how much? You put in a few inches of chips, and all of a sudden you've got twice the surface area, right?
Yeah, for Kentucky straight, you'd want, I believe, the new barrels, and you have to char the new barrels, and then you have to age it for a couple years. And
I think it has to be four if it's a Kentucky bourbon.
Well,
maybe not.
What's Jim? I mean, Jim Beam's the biggest.
Yeah, well, they make a lot of everybody's booze.
I think that's
booze.
Two.
They make everybody's booze, don't they?
A lot, yeah. And Beam Suntory is the parent company.
Yeah.
If anyone wanted the the invest.
But now there's stuff where the one you guys sell, Bullet, the Bullet Distillery is weed covered. They just use the name, and I think it's done in California or something. So there's all kinds of ways around it, but. Anyway, speaking of around it, what do you make of the commodity world these days? We've got some floods in Iowa. That didn't affect anything, did it, or did it?
Well, the grains are strictly driven by weather right about now. So if you see expanded heat dome for more than a week, your grains probably rise. When's
the worst time for hot weather? When they're just coming out? Well, they wouldn't be just coming out of the ground. It was knee high by the 4th of July, right? So they're already pretty well sprouted.
The worst time. I guess what we're learning now is it can survive without water longer because of whatever genes they've adapted or decided to place in these. And it's more resistant, so the worst time would probably be later.
Okay.
So I would say after 4th of July.
So right now there's no...
That's just me speculating.
There's no concern now about the crop yield at this point.
No, there's not. I mean, you would see beans at 13 if there was questions about.
Where are they?
We're 11.5-ish, depending on which.
That's not usually high.
Right, right.
Where do you get corn?
They want it to be at 5.5, but it's definitely not there. Let me get you some updated prices. I've got the beans at 11.25. That's the Nove beans. And the July
beans.
So
that's the crop on the ground.
Yeah,
the
July beans are 11.68.
All right, so explain that.
So depending on when you want them. And then July corn is 4.34. So it's at production cost is where you can put.
Where's
it.
Deese corn?
Don't have that one up.
Right, for those that are wondering what in God's name we're talking about, July corn is it's already been harvested. It's the July future, but nobody's going to harvest their corn between now and July, at least not here, maybe down in South America or someplace. The when you go by in your car and you say, hey, the corn looks good, you're talking about September harvesting. You're talking about the corn. That's this year's crop, correct?
Oh, damn it. Quotes are frozen.
Uh-oh. But anywho, when you say the gene splicing, whatever they do to make the stuff more resistant.
Yeah, it's the hot topic, you know, GMO versus non-GMO. Well,
does that what's your take on that?
My take is grains are the original technology. So farming and such were, you know, the original inventors in agriculture, and they were the beneficiary of just new methods, new technology, and now the latest iteration of that is not gene therapy, but gene splicing to make the crops yield more and get more out of your fields. So the editing that they do, and they've been doing for a long time, has been through the genetic makeup of the crops. So
the first one of those, before they even knew what they were doing, didn't they do that for wheat?
Thousands of years ago.
I don't know, it was that long ago, but the wheat, this is a kind of a weird story, but one of the reasons why, or at least some people speculate, one of the reasons why some people can't eat wheat, especially Irish people can have a problem with wheat, more so than most nationalities, from what I understand, but I know a few people that have this issue. I don't know how many years ago, if you had a wheat, you know, you see these, what they call it, amber waves of grain, you know, in the song, right, America the Beautiful? You see these fields with the gentle winds and the wheat's going back and forth, but it's always pointing straight up, right? Well, wheat didn't used to do that, right? If you had rain or something, it just was on the ground and it pretty much died, didn't it? So somebody somewhere way back did something. They spliced something. This is long before you had labs and stuff. So the wheat essentially was what? Viagra for wheat, right, Greg? I mean, so it stands straight up.
Stands straight up.
But I mean, that was a genetic change. And some people think that genetic change is the reason why some people, and a lot of Irish people, can't have problems with gluten, right?
There's a lot of theories about that one. And
they're not unproven.
Some of them are related to the wheat. Some of them are related to us.
Yeah.
But in terms of technology, you know, when you get into farming, you not only have what's in the ground, but you have what's out, the way you harvest, the way you extract or press or crush, or there's a lot of different technologies that go not just before it's planted but after. So when we talk about technology and agriculture, I mean, it's the original. We were here trying to feed people, and be more productive. The latest are, you know, genes, and then now we do indoor vertical. So people are getting into that.
What in God's name is that?
Well, imagine like a huge greenhouses. You get less water, or you use less water, and the energy inside is more controlled. It's interesting.
What's your gut feel when you? I mean, one of the guys who used to help us out in the show, and I think he's still around somewhere. I haven't seen him much since COVID. Chris Mance. And he was big on, you know, he knew a lot of the farmers, and they did a lot of stuff with actually China for agricultural back and forth programs. He was always
real important there that they get it right, because their their land isn't nearly as fertile and productive as ours.
Right. Well, whose is, except for Argentina?
Good question.
Yeah. Well, anyway, see, he goes out and he was doing some stuff for
Brazil.
For those that, I think this is true, when you go to the supermarket and you see the sweet corn, I think all sweet corn still has to be picked by hand.
Doesn't have to, but it that way because there's not really a lot of it.
Not a lot of it, but I don't know. You're not going to put the big tractor would destroy the street with the sweet corn, right? You don't want the sweet corn all husked. You want to eat it anyway. But they go. He and a group of people would go once in a while for the food depository. And he had a Tahoe and a bunch of people at pickup trucks. They'd go out and they'd pick a whole bunch of sweet corn and drop it off the food depository. And they would get rid of it, you know, in a day or two, obviously. But, and he was all for a lot of this, you know, genetic stuff. And he goes, He goes, you know, it's kind of creepy when you're walking down the aisle of corn and you've got, you know, the mosquito net on your head and on your body and stuff because the bugs are all over the damn place. They're everywhere but on the corn.
Yeah.
They don't like the corn because they've made enough genetic things to where the bugs, he goes, you do wonder a little bit.
You think that's creepy.
The bugs don't even like it. How we were eating it.
You think that's creepy. Think about being out in the field and having like four or five of those huge drones going by spraying everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's next level.
But he goes, you know, the bugs, even the bugs don't want to eat it. It's like, ever tell you my cupcake story?
I'd be nervous about those bugs then too. Cause what are they adapting to eat? It's gonna be you.
Oh, they wanted Chris. Yeah. Did I ever tell you my cupcake story?
Cupcakes?
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody likes cupcakes.
Matt knows the story. My nephew Matt, who works here at PTI, just had a birthday. God, you know you're getting old when your nephews are like 40. So when Matt was a youngster, we drive out skiing, right? And I got this extended cab pickup, and out we go to Steamboat. So we come back, and we're back like a week or so. And all of a sudden, he goes, hey, Uncle Tom, I think I might have dropped a cupcake in the back of your truck. And I'm going, all right. So he was 10 years old, 12 years old. So I look back there. I don't see anything. This is in February. Actually, it was Casimir Pulaski weekend, which is a great weekend to go skiing from here because nobody else in the country is off except here, the kids. So all of a sudden, I sell the truck in maybe September after a very long, hot summer. And, what do you do when you sell something? You dig under the seats and try and find $2 worth of change or something.
So March to September?
Yeah.
Oh.
So what do you think I find in the back?
Found the cupcake.
And guess what?
It was still the same cupcake. The
exact same cupcake. The mold didn't want it. The bugs didn't want it. It was like Bill Murray with the baby roof in the pool. I mean, I'm sitting there going, this thing, it's a Hostess cupcake. Nobody wanted it. I'm thinking, how the hell can you eat this thing? Well, don't
Twinkies. Easy.
Yeah, don't Twinkies have a shelf life of like a century or something?
Easy.
Yeah, easy. I mean, yeah. You could have, if you'd have put that on some table, everyone would say, it's a brand new cupcake. Like, now that freaked me out. It was like the bugs not wanting the corn.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, I'm there's sure a lot of advanced technology in that guess. Cupcake, too.
I guess.
When you think about those sugars and preservatives and...
Yeah, but I can't even imagine what's in there.
Ultra-processed.
Yeah,
all for, you know, a dollar and a half.
Yeah, all for a dollar and a half. It's like... If you were to make a...
Calorically, it's pretty dense. I mean, yeah. You get a lot of energy from that.
Why don't the bugs want the sugar?
I don't
sugar?
Know if it's nutrient-dense, but the calories
but
are there.
But if it's sugar, why don't the bug... The bug's not like...
it's not natural sugar.
Mm. It's what's that corn stuff? The
high fructose?
Yeah, the fructose. Yeah. I mean, bugs don't like fructose?
I think maybe in the liquid form they might like it more.
Oh, God. Anyway, so if you were... I know you're trading the grains all day. Is there, this early in the year, is there a trade? I'm not asking you trading advice, but is there an obvious trade? Is that not like something's real expensive or real cheap? Where you would think it's going to go back towards the middle. Everything seems kind of in the middle, doesn't it?
For me, what I'm looking at is Jan versus March and Dees versus Jan. So trading one against the other.
All right, so Dees versus Jan is somewhat the same crop, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens
different
between...
delivery dates.
What happens between Dees versus Jan? Is there a harvest anywhere in the world?
Normally they don't. They just kind of oscillate, so back and forth. And if you pick up on that back and forth, it's...
This is beans, right?
These are the crush prices.
Okay.
So there isn't much movement, so those go back and forth, and, you know, the same as everything else. Buy low, sell high, and do it again.
All right,
and again.
Tell me what the crush is.
And the crush is what the companies like ADM and Bunge and Cargill make by processing the beans. So it's their profit margin. So their profit margin goes up when the bean products go up, and their profit margin goes down.
But there's
down.
Three products to trade. There's the
right.
whole beans, there's the bean meal, and there's the bean oil, correct?
Right. Animal feed and call it salad dressing or frying oil.
Do most restaurants use corn oil or soybean oil?
The most, I would say, use a blend of something like bean oil and corn oil is more expensive, so not as many.
Use. This is it better?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what your. No, corn oil is cheaper.
My grandmother used to always use good, high quality corn oil. So I don't know why
well,
she
it's,
use
it's usually here. A blend of some kind of vegetable and bean oil.
Okay.
I'd say for the majority. What does McDonald's use? McDonald's uses something else.
So when you, but you're talking about a highly specialized. You start talking about the crush in two months, you're talking about a highly specialized sort of thing. But there's no, it's not like beans have gotten annihilated and they're trading like $5 or they're
no,
off
beans
the
are at say costs of production. So farmers are hesitant to sell because they don't want to lock in, you know, nothing. So they're kind of in limbo.
So bean cost of production is up to $13?
Well, we're trading 11.5.
Okay, 11.5.
So they would like it to be somewhere around 13.5. You'd see a lot more selling if it was 13 or 13.5, but now they're kind of, you know, in that scenario where if they sell now, well, you don't really make much for the entire year. That doesn't feel good.
So the cost is up that high?
Yeah. Or at least for this year, yeah.
All right, so if your cost of production is $11.50 and it's trading $11.50 and you're a farmer, do you go ahead and do it and hope for the best? What happens if you get hail over your place?
Well, then you got a big issue. So
yeah.
That's why a lot of farmers now, they would maybe sell cash and buy calls. That would be one strategy to deal with something like now. Another one is probably pick up a few puts just in case.
Okay, so what they would do is they would already tell their grain operator, I'll sell you this many bushels. Now, the soybeans are a shorter season, right? Than corn?
It depends on where you are.
Okay. But when I first came down here and my brother was trading the corn options, between the, for those that don't...
corn is usually finished planting before soybeans.
Right. And so if you have problems getting your corn in, you can always cut back the soybeans. Sort of. And if your fields are too wet or something.
Yeah, that's...
But is in my... I know when my bro is doing that stuff, Dan's the president of PTI, but he knows a lot about grains and stuff because he traded those. But it seemed like when he was in the pits, this is going back a ways, every between the genetic work, I'll say, and a little bit of the warming trend we've had, I'm not going to say, you know, you using your gas lawnmower is causing it, but didn't the corn belt, the place where you can...
It's expanded a little bit.
It was going up something like, was it like 10 miles a year when he was in the pit or something? To where it used to be like maybe southern Wisconsin, and now it's...
And if you see an explosion in bean prices, you'll see them switch a little bit. And
they're
very, very flexible. You just got to have it on hand.
Well, you also, if you use... Every year you do corn in a row, you got to use more fertilizer because corn grabs nutrients out of the soil. So
you'd need higher prices like they had a couple years ago and last year. You'd want really higher prices in order to do that.
I mean, ideally you do.
Because then it's worth it.
What, 2 years corn, 1 year beans? Because beans put nutrients back in the soil, correct?
You can buy the fertilizer and not care about because, you know, you're making the more profit from the higher prices.
What do they buy fertilizer in bags for a farm, or do you buy it like a truckload?
You'd want to do full, like, if you're doing the compressed or liquid, or, I mean, you got to spray it. So the volume is liquid
So you need a bunch of water just to fertilize.
Depending on which one, phosphorus, potassium, nitrogen. It's different for each one, but you got to be able to put it on quickly and efficiently.
It's a tough business. I mean, it really is a tough business.
It's like anything else. You got to be on top of it, or else the market kind of.
I wonder how many. I mean, because the stuff, the equipment and stuff is so.
Would you say when you ask, you know, what are the trades? It's like any other commodity. it's got its main drivers. Ours would be weather, so depending on what you think of the weather for the next, call it 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, you trade on that opinion. So personally, I'm not looking to get short here, but...
Well, Dan, when he first went to the trading floor, some old fart, the old fart's probably not as old as I am now. Anyway, some old fart walked by and said, son, corn costs $2.50 a bushel. If it gets much below that, you buy it. If it gets much above that, you sell it. So, and for a long time, it was what, for like $4 or something. But there's no obvious grain or futures trade right now. Not even the natural gas, because it's back up above. It got down to like $2.70 $1.70. There's no obvious where the price of corn is like $11.50 or soybeans are $11.50 and it's trading $6 or it's trading $20. There's nothing. It's really out of whack right now, is there? Maybe a little cheap?
I guess it would depend. They look at it as what? Profit per acre.
Yeah.
So you look at kind of what you got and what you think you're going to have, and you want to hedge some of it because, you know, if you work the whole year and make negative, that's not sustainable, and especially if you got to pay rent on your land, that really sucks. So... as borrowing costs move higher, or if they keep going, you know, you have to make sure that you can at least pay that.
I know it's different. Guys have a different history and different soil quality and so forth. But just in terms of weather and events in your place, be it like a hailstorm, God help you, or kind of local flood or local drought or something, because we could have all kinds of a normal weather in Chicago, and two counties north could be in a drought. So it's really pretty local, right? So it's not like, well, the state's got enough water. It doesn't mean your county does.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But what percentage would you say, and then we'll go to break, if you were a corn farmer, would you say, all right, I can hedge meaning sell forward, 70%, 80%, 50%? You sure as hell not going to do 100%. I don't think.
Well, if you could pick up some cheap calls.
That's a different story, yeah.
Yeah, the marketing... you know, that's what they call their
hedging. Or you can protect it by buying puts.
Right. If it's really expensive to buy puts, well, then maybe you don't buy the puts. Maybe you try to sell the calls and then buy the puts with the money.
The problem with that is you're selling the calls naked. Your plants are not.
If you haven't hedged the futures, then you're okay. But
same thing. Same kind of margin.
It's the people who are doing stuff that are too leveraged, or, you know, up and over what probably is right for their balance sheets. Those are the ones.
Well, you sure as hell don't want to sell 100% and have the hailstorms knock your entire crop out. Then you got a problem.
But if you've got the calls, it doesn't matter as much.
That's true.
So it's what's cheap, and are you taking advantage of kind of the best way to do things? Because sometimes the futures aren't the answers. Sometimes it's the options.
By the way,
just because it's cheaper.
For those that don't know, long calls, short futures, the same thing as long put, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can be short futures, and if you've got long calls, you know, it's a wash.
It's just
so you've got free. Yeah. You've got a cheaper way of having your puts on.
Well, the funny, we'll delay here a second to go to break, because when we used to do a lot of seminars and people would talk about options, if you were to say, if you ask a group of 100 people, well, 80 people, don't matter how many people, what's the safest option play? What are people going to say, Greg?
Covered calls.
Covered, right. Which is covered calls, meaning that you own the stack and you sell calls against your stack.
Right.
And if you say, what's the riskiest option play? What are they going to say?
Short calls.
No, they're going to say, they're going to say short put.
Short put?
Well, because after 87 crash and everything, that was where we got caught, right?
Well, they would be wrong then.
Well, it's not infinite, but I mean, and when I'd say it's the exact same position, talk about 100 heads giving you a blank stare. It's the same position. Well,
you got them engaged.
You got them engaged. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures down. So it's always good to get people engaged that way. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures down 10, Dow futures are up 97, most of that is IBM's up 234, there's not much down, everything's kind of green. Boeing's down $1.56, as I guess they're talking about criminal charges against Boeing. I don't know how that's going to work. Maybe we'll ask Mr. Flanagan how that works. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 111.6%, the FTSE up 40.5%, CAC round up 63.8%. Whatever was going on in France, which sent the stock down, markets down pretty hard for a week, been ticking back up really now a bunch of days in a row. So whatever is happening over there seems that's behind them a little bit. Nikkei up 208.5%, Hang Seng down 81 cents, let's call that one flat, lurking at the 18,000 number, 18,027. However, the Chinese market is ducked under 3,000. This is Shanghai. There's a bunch of them on the main limit. This is the Shanghai. 2963 down 35 points. That's 1.2%. So that's a lot. These guys are not doing very well with their pump you up with their market strategy. On Friday, the Dow was up 15, S&P down 8, NASDAQ down 32, and everybody's going crazy because NVIDIA's actually been down a few days in a row. What are we going to do without our market leader, NVIDIA, going up every day? 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.27. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.42. Japan up 1 basis point, 0.994. maybe get back to 1% here. We'll see. Oil up 24 cents, 80.97. It still is not at the top end of the range. The range I'm thinking is 76 to 83, 82.5. Brent up 26 cents, 85.50. Natural gas up a penny, 271. It did make it to $3, but now it's back down. RBOB unchanged at 250. Gold up 7.10, 23.38. It was way up on Thursday and down on Friday. Silver up 2 cents. The silver was up like 4% on Thursday and down 3.5 on Friday. Nobody seems to know how that's happening. At least I don't. Copper down 2 cents, 4.41. We've got the foreign exchange. The dollar is actually slipping a little bit because euro is up to 107.3. It was 106.9 on Friday, I believe. And the British pound back up to 126.6. It was down to 126.3 or something. So dollar is slipping just a little bit. We've got Bitcoin down 3,000, 61,073. Where did it get to, Greg? Was it 73 it got to? So it's down to 61. A lot of stuff there, man. What do you got for us, Traffic, Weather, Sports? Cubs lose again, even though Rhino's statue went up.
It's at this point where I don't even have to really change my my template too much. I just Cubs lose.
Certainly not
Cubs
for the Sox.
Nope, yeah. Not either. How's it going, everyone? Currently 6:42 a.m. on June 24th, 2024. The current weather in Chicago is 67 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies, and a high of 82 for the day. Down in Phoenix, it's 92 degrees right now, sunny to partly cloudy, and a high of 110. Be thankful you're not in Phoenix. Over to sports. In the MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to Tigers at 11-2. As well as that, Cubs lost their home game against the Mets. Final score was 5-2. Tonight we have the Sox to play the Dodgers at 7:10, and Cubs playing San Francisco Giants at 8:45. As well as that, in the NHL Stanley Cup Final, Game 7 takes place tonight on June 24th. The Edmonton Oilers have been facing off against the Florida Panthers with the series tied 3-3.
They were down 3-0, weren't they?
They were, yes, yeah. And it's a real comeback for them. So tonight will be the tiebreaker for the series. So I got Chief, back to you.
The big sports event yesterday, which normally wouldn't be on your template, was the Chicago Sky was sold out.
Oh, wow.
The women, it was Reese against Caitlin Clark. They played the Indianapolis team, and they actually won the first time this year. They're 1-2 against the, was it the Fever, Greg? Is that the team Caitlin Clark's on? But it was packed. The average ticket price, $250. So there you go. And then Ryan,
that was at Wintrust.
Yeah, and then Ryan Sandberg's statue was unveiled yesterday. I remember when Rhino came up. Good ball player. Boy, great attitude. Every year his attitude was, I just want to make the team.
His speech was a good speech, too.
Yeah, Rhino's a good guy. Always has been. He was a really good AAA manager. He should have been manager of the Cubs, but he went to Philly. And then they did okay there for a little bit, and then they got rid of him, and then he said, I don't really want to manage anymore. But he's been a Cub ambassador for a while. But he came up as a third baseman. Then he went to second base, and he had all those gold gloves, and Joe Morgan couldn't stand him for some reason, so he thought he wasn't even a Hall of Famer, but I think he surely is. Well, and he is. He's in there. An interesting story, but Rhino was a hell of a player, and those are some really good teams. And the 84 team, I still think, was the best one, and they ended up, I believe, Johnny with us?
I am. Good morning, Tom.
I believe that because the Cubs didn't have lights, even though they had the better winning percentage, in that 3 out of 5 series with San Diego, they had to give up a home game. And they won the first two games here and then lost 3 out there. And I think one of the games out there was a day game, even though the Cubs had to forfeit a night game because they didn't have lights. How screwed up was that?
Yeah, pretty screwed up.
Was that 84? I can't remember what year when they got the lights. But here's a question for you and Greg, because Greg's always a contrarian sort of dude. The first official night game, Big Don and I split tickets, so he had tickets to the first night game, and it made it to about the fourth inning, and they had an absolute deluge, and it got rained out.
88.
And then the second game I went. It was the first game they played the whole game. So which was the first night game? I'm absent. I'm going to say the first official.
8888.
was it 88 was the first one?
Yeah. 8888.
Yeah.
I think.
And I was, so I was at the first full night game. I was at the second night because the first one got rained out. Everybody was there. It was a good time Charlie night the first night. Kevin, you with us?
Good morning.
Hey, reason why we have Kevin here for a bit, and I asked, talked to John about it last night. Are you guys watching any of the College World Series?
Very little. Chicago teams have kind of ruined my baseball season, so.
It's 1-1, the Vols against the Aggies.
Well, Tennessee's a big, big favorite, and Texas A&M beat them the first night. And then yesterday, I think Tennessee was, a minus 250 favorite? That's a lot.
Well, they was it 4-1? I don't know. Yeah. It was a pretty good game.
It was a good game. But you know what, Kevin, I don't think they have a pitch clock, do they? Games take forever. They're three and a half hours. They're like Major League Baseball used to be. Anyway, my question, and the reason why I asked Kevin, and we've been talking a lot about the portals and payment in college and football. And then, we're seeing this kind of explosion in girls' basketball, and obviously we watched a little bit of the lacrosse with the Irish in there. But the announcers from ESPN, well, yesterday they were actually on Channel 7, but ABC, say, all they were talking about on Friday night was it never ends. Right now, if you didn't make it to this thing, just because these guys are playing, the managers can't focus on the game totally because somebody's got to be working the portal. Somebody's got to be working the recruiting. It's all about next year, and the guys that aren't here are out pounding the bushes and recruiting people and working on the portal. And I'm just sitting there going, what the bleep?
It's more pro than pro.
It's more pro than pro. And I'm like, and also, I mean, Kevin, you mentioned this, I think. Out of the eight teams that went to Omaha, are four from the SEC and four from the ACC?
Yep.
Which is, are we not only in football, what is the economics of this baseball? Does that mean every team in the country from Bradley to Notre Dame to everybody now is on the portal and offering guys money for baseball too? I mean, how crazy is this going to get? I mean, what are we doing here?
Completely crazy. It's going to be completely crazy. What I mentioned to you yesterday. This is what Major League Baseball would be like if everybody was a free agent every single year.
Yeah, well,
that would be pretty fun.
Well, the difference is, if everything was open in baseball, you would be free to sign a 5-year contract. Right, if you were.
Well, that's true. Yes, you would be able to sign a 5-year deal. But when I said free agent every year, of course, that means you're only signing 1-year contracts.
Right, but I don't think that would happen if everybody's all of a sudden had the ability to move.
This is why I totally believe that we are going to see a day when the players become employees of the university because that's how they're going to be able to sign them to contracts.
Explain, if you can, briefly, because we're going to talk to John. I want to talk to John about other stuff. But in baseball, it's got a unique draft thing, right? And so does hockey. How do those differ from football?
Well, they all differ from each other.
Well, and each other, yeah.
And each other. So football allows you, or football requires you to make it through 3 years of college eligibility,
or have that age, right?
I don't think they have an age on there. There are no sophomores that go in.
No, but I'm saying
basketball has an age, but basketball's also now has this ability for you to sign with a professional team, whether it be a G League team or a separate team. But really, to sign and compete at a minor league level now that they didn't used to have. In baseball, you can be drafted after high school, and if you sign a contract, then you go to the minor leagues. You'll go to the rookie league in the first year, and then you'll go to the low class A and work your way up through the minor leagues. If you do not sign a contract and you choose to go to college, then you're not eligible to be drafted until after your third year in college, with some exceptions for going to, transferring out to community colleges and things that we've seen. But the general rule is you're gonna be 3 years in college, or four, and then you're going to if you're going to be a professional player, you're gonna sign it. Hockey, you can get drafted, and the team will hold on to the draft rights until such time as you have either rescinded your college hockey eligibility, or you run out of college hockey eligibility, and at that point they have to get you under contract before the next draft. But they continue to hold your draft rights while you're in college, no matter how many years you choose to play. And then in basketball has an age limit that has caused a lot of people to go for 1 year, and the WNBA also has a four-year rule unless you turn 22 the year of the draft after your junior season. So they keep their athletes in college. And what sport have I left out?
Well, you kind of left out football. If you don't go to college,
football's 3 years in college.
Or if you go to work at a McDonald's, you can't get drafted until you would have been a junior, correct?
I think so.
Yeah, you can't just say I'm not going to college and get drafted. I think it's, I don't know if it's specific age, but if you're a senior this year, which would be 2024, I don't think you can get drafted to would have been 2027. You'd be a junior.
Yeah, and the NFL doesn't want you, because if you aren't at that age, at any young age like that, because they don't have a minor league, they don't have a place to put you, and two is you're just not physically developed enough to compete against the kinds of athletes that they have who are full grown men.
Right. There might be some kid that could, you could run back punts or something, but you're not going to take the beating.
Yeah, the easiest position to play in football is to be a running back.
Except your ass kicked.
If you're fast and you know how to follow the blocking, you can be somewhat successful. If you can't pass protect, you can't pick up blitzes and things like that, then they're not going to have you in any passing situation, which in the NFL is pretty much every down. So
yeah. But what, Kevin, I guess what I'm trying to get a handle on here, and Jan, please kick in here, because otherwise I talk too much. Everybody knows that. What those guys were talking about, the ESPN announcers, and of course, for them, they want it as big as possible because that's their job, right? They love doing the College World Series. They're getting paid finally for it. So that part, I get it. I get where they're coming from. But what are we offering a baseball player now? And how many guys, unless you recruited the person, how many people are we talking about to manage a portal for baseball with 200 people in there? I mean, I don't.
First of all, let's flip that for a second. And what they're really trying to tell you on ESPN is that these poor managers have to spend their downtime recruiting instead of strategizing for the next World Series game, to which I call BS.
Well, I agree.
They aren't, going away and coming up with this all new game plan that's going to surprise everybody. Not at this point in the season, and not in that sport. So, poor, pitiful coaches. They do have to be working on recruiting in between games. They have, because everybody else is, because the NCAA is foolish enough to open up for transfers before the last game of the season is played.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty dumb.
Yeah, but they do it, and they've done it for other sports as well. So that's just the way it is.
Well, I mean, I guess are people getting, because then he was talking about how the boosters love the sports, and are we ever going to run out of boot? Now, why does somebody sound so crude? If you give a bunch of money to somebody, and your team wins, does a certain part of your body grow an inch, or what is the?
I'm pretty sure it does. Yeah,
yeah, it must do that or something. what would possess me to give $500,000 to the Notre Dame baseball program to pay five kids to play baseball? What do I care?
Well, there are people who make big donations, but they do it, you know, under different premises. So, you know, for instance, Frank Eck Stadium, where the Irish play, is, you know, guess who donated a whole lot of money for that?
I'm thinking Frank Eck.
Yeah. So, you know, you will see a lot of those kinds of donations. And, you know, you have endowed coaches' salaries and you know, things like that nowadays. And often enough, it is from somebody who has was part of the program once upon a time and has made a lot of money and you know, sees that as a way to give back. And I'm cool with that. That's sort of the traditional college donation model anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not really what's at issue here. What's at issue is people who are willing to, you know, who are basically providing the payroll for the athletes.
Yeah, I mean, how far down, I guess, from an economics standpoint, which is, you know, which I'm always locked into because that's my job. Football, obviously, we've all talked about it, John, you and me, that some of these places make a boatload of money on football, or at least it appears they do until their expenses after a period of time seem to rise up to meet the income, which happens a lot of places. But
don't believe anything you see published.
I know, but I'm saying, I mean, it's when the revenue's gone up, when coaches used to make $40,000 a year, now they make, you know, how many, $10 million or something, type of thing. So, or some places are $8 million.
Yeah. So, with all of that, that's telling you whether they're spending it wisely, whether they're spending themselves into trouble or not. But what it does tell you is that there's a hell of a lot of money tied up in this because they're willing to fork it out for people.
Okay. So, but we've talked from the top down. Texas, Alabama, SEC schools, the Irish, they're making a bunch of dough on football. Now, I think the Big Ten, even the Purdue's and the Illinois of this world, are making some money now because of the TV contract.
They're splitting up. It was at $50 million, and now I'm sure it's all been renegotiated as they brought more marquee names into the...
Right, but now we dropped down a peg. Is Northern Illinois making money in football? I don't know. Northwestern, I bet, wouldn't be if it wasn't for the TV contract. I mean, are we talking, once you drop below the top 50, are they making dough? Okay, well, switch that over to women's basketball. I'm going to say 5 programs are break even at best, maybe
that's
10.
Probably about right.
Now we get to baseball. I think it's pretty clear that the SEC, ACC, and maybe the teams out west, and I won't say what the hell. I mean, Arizona State always had a big crowd. Arizona always had a big crowd. UCLA did. I'm thinking maybe there's 30 baseball teams that make some dough, maybe. But now it is.
Florida schools, Texas schools, Louisiana State, across the South. It's a big deal in the spring on campus at those places.
Well, last week I watched women's beach volleyball. NCAA, because there was nothing else on at the Triple E tap.
That's why you watched it.
Actually, you know, very disappointing in that regard, Kevin. Just saying.
At your age, you can't afford to be disappointed.
Let's just say, no bikinis. Just saying. None of the stuff you see in the Olympics and stuff, where it's obviously a good watch. Whole different thing. Gym shorts. A whole different program, NCAA. Okay. But I'm saying, when you start walking down the chain here, women's swimming, men's whatever, wrestling, I mean, there might be 2 schools that charge for wrestling, or maybe Iowa or who else. How far down are we going with this? And I don't think this is the...
I always told you? What have I always told you? You have to consider all those other sports part of the football payroll. Because even paying for all of those athletes, all of those scholarships, all of their tuition, room, and board, and all of them plus the football team is still a very inexpensive payroll. And by having those other sports on scholarships as, quote, an extracurricular activity, that justifies them keeping their football payroll.
Okay, but now what I'm saying, I guess what I'm
going... It justifies the employment model.
Okay, but... Now we're paying the football players, which means That one might get break even.
We're not paying them directly.
Okay.
And if you're on the rowing team, you have the same opportunity. If someone wants you to do appearances and advertising and all that for them, then you have the same opportunity that the football players do.
Right, but we all know that this is being orchestrated by the school. Now, I mean, I think...
No. They're totally at arm's length. Yeah. They don't have any...
Right, so I guess what I'm saying...
They said so. I know it's true.
Do we really want 7 or 8 people working the portal of the baseball thing and giving everybody who even calls you up an offer because you know how good he is and so you're going to find a way for him to get paid? I mean, do we really want 20 teams at every school doing this?
Well, here's something to keep in mind. There's only like 12 or 13 baseball scholarships allowed per school.
What difference does it make if you're getting money for them? They can pay.
Yeah, but if you're getting paid. But, I don't know that is there anybody on the baseball team getting paid big money? Maybe a handful.
Maybe
it could be high-round draft picks because people want to sign them up and establish business relationships that will continue into their professional career.
Well,
if we get a Paul Skeens or somebody like that, then sure.
Why should those people be going to the Major League Baseball for nothing if they're providing all this? Major League Baseball would love it if the colleges all find a way to pay these kids and they get rid of AAA, right?
Well, they might, but to date, Major League Baseball has been completely happy to sign kids instead of getting them to go to college. They offer big bonuses to some of the best players to have them avoid college.
It's kind of an odd model. Well, we'll talk more about it on Wednesday. We're going to go to break. We come back, talk to John about the markets and kind of what's going on and some of the legal stuff going on because he's our attorney dude. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
You got a pool over there?
We have a pond in the back. We have a pool and a pond. A pond would be good for you.
Walk with me.
Take. What would you say, Matt, if somebody said the pond would be good for you?
I think I'd be a little insulted, to be honest with you.
especially if it was an alligator pod.
I'm no frog.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Get me out of there.
S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ futures down 48. And, Jan, I'm sorry to let Kevin, we monopolized that with stuff. I was stuck at Audrey's, and not stuck. She, of course, with her business. There isn't a house or a place Audrey doesn't want to look at, right? if it, when it comes to real estate. So she got all all these shows that are on whatever, and they got these, this couple now. The new thing is, well, you know, there's beachfront something something, and there's remodeling this and remodeling that. Well, now there's one where they just go grab pieces of property, and then they negotiate with the architect of what they all want. I can't imagine Audrey and I designing a house together. I mean, she's a great girl, but boy, oh boy, every single light fixture, we'd be, I don't like that one. I like it. You know, can you imagine? But so they got this big thing. They're down south, and they got this water in the back, some like, you know, little stream or something, something. And the guy goes, hey, he goes swimming in there. And she goes, I don't think he goes swimming there. Who's swimming by but his big alligator? I'm going, no, you're not. What is, I don't think I'd want an alligator pond on my property, would you? Just saying.
I think that's an attractive nuisance.
I wouldn't want a small dog out there, that's for sure. I mean, or even a big dog. Well, anyway, in terms of, we've been trying to match up the market to the real estate, to sort of everything here, Jan, and it's kind of hard to do. Aud and I went out to, she was in Wisconsin and it was raining up there, so they came back early. She was on vacation with one of her friends. And so we went to Fox's out there in Laurel. I mean, we go there enough to where the ladies behind the bar, they're not, all of them have regular jobs, right? And they just do that like one night a week just for a little extra cash. And they're very pleasant, very nice. And one of the ladies is a speech therapist for younger kids. And, you know, very nice. I'm sure she's very good at her job. And then she works there like one day a week, maybe two if they need her. And she has, I think she has one kid. Anyway, I'm not saying anything. But she was telling me that, she goes, you know, I haven't been able to raise my prices to any of my clients because they don't have any money. You know, I mean, and some of them I don't even charge because, you know, because that's extra money for a family, and all of a sudden you got a kid that's having trouble talking. I mean, nobody budgets for that, right? She goes, I haven't been able to raise my prices since before COVID because my people just can't pay, and those are my people, and those are the people I love to help, and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, you know, I'm gonna have to get a raise here or something. She goes, because everything just keeps going up, up, up. And you know, in this debate, if the guy starts asking these kind of questions of our two presumed candidates here, do these guys even know what the hell they're talking about? What people are going through?
Well, it's pretty hard for people to admit, you know, the failures that have, you know, got us where we are. And both sides, of course, are responsible, so it isn't like anybody comes out of this looking good. But this is what's so scary about a volatile election cycle like we have, where there is such, you know, pent-up anger on both sides for different reasons, but there is no clear path out of it from either side. And certainly, I mean, people may think the individual candidates have their bag of tricks and stuff to make things better. That's, you know, fantasy thinking. Certainly the parties don't show any evidence of having figured anything out here, so we'll get more of the same, barring some kind of, you know, moment of truth, which is, you know, will mean something very unpleasant, but somebody's going to have to come up with some new solutions to make it work. But you know, there's always been a kind of sense after an election of, you know, failures or the dashed hopes for whatever side you're supporting. And, you know, I think it may be more acute this time than in the past, just because the reality is so much more desperate. It doesn't really matter in some ways who's in there, other than that if one side gets in there, it will put a block on what the other side has been saying they're going to do. And, you know, this is, neither one of these candidates is, you know, independent enough from their own party backing to really make a difference. And I'm talking about in the financial mess that, you know, the woman with Fox is describing to you. There's the reality of making things better is going to be such a terrible pill for people to swallow, because it means, you know, some really tough times where there'll be, you know, tamped down government spending, and that's going to put a lot of people in a tight spot that they never were in before. But it's going to have to happen at some point. And
better it happens, you know, sooner rather than later. But there's no political will for that to happen.
The decisions, Jan, are so difficult. They've been allowed to get so difficult, and I give it my best effort, but when I explain a lot of this economic stuff, I hope you understand what the hell I'm talking about, but I'm not so sure I communicate it in any way. You know, I don't have a blackboard or anything, but when you look at what happened in 2000, okay, now, again, it's not the same sort of thing, but the Fed essentially poured a whole bunch of money in for Y2K, all right, and the market, which was already pretty high, went even higher. The market did a little bit, but really the dot-bomb stuff went to the moon. The same craze were, you know, the seven or eight stocks back then, actually it was four or five, but say seven or eight, went flying up, and what the Fed did after Y2K, and that all settled down, they sort of made the decision, let's pull some of the money out. And when they did, the froth in the market kind of went right back down. But whenever it goes down, it tends to go down more because people, and this is something I know nobody believes me, people lose more on the way down than they made on the way up. When I say people, in aggregate, because when it's going up, people borrow money, and there's borrowed money. If there was no leverage, it wouldn't make any difference. Okay, like if you go back to the tulip craze, if you and I and Matt Byrne, all of a sudden we start bidding up tulips, but we paid cash the whole way, and all of a sudden it just went down, we just lost the cash we paid. But as soon as they became marginable, we didn't use the term back then, as soon as you could borrow money to buy tulips, now you got a danger, right? Because on the way down, now there's forced selling and things like that. So what you end up doing when you're doing that, there's always some people that have the assets that benefit by the bump in price, and there's other people who don't. Okay, so you're talking about a class conscious thing, and it's not even necessarily a class thing, because you could have somebody who has a whole bunch of money in New York that's rented his apartment like people you did for 50 years. So if you're a renter versus an owner, it shouldn't really be that much difference in one gains over the other, right? If all the if all the numbers are correct, the person who owns the place should make a certain return, and the renter maybe is using his capital elsewhere and he's making that return someplace else. It shouldn't be a massive difference where rent goes up, you know, three times the price of inflation or two times the price of inflation every year, and all of a sudden, you know, the place goes up by four times over a certain period of time where the owner is a massive winner on the thing. But that's I'll leave that for the blackboard someday. But this time, during the COVID, when these guys pumped this money in, you have this incredible change in the stock market valuation and housing valuation. Not so much commercial buildings, because they've got problems. But if the other problems weren't there, they'd be the same way. We've essentially done this to asset prices. We did it to cars, used cars, did it to everything. But now people are looking at, and this is why I think if you really take the left and the right, they're all pissed off at something. But it's kind of hard to put your finger on the something. If you're on the right and you see all of a sudden, hey, I can't buy a house, my kids can't buy a house, I can't afford education, something's changed. You're going to blame it on people that get something for free or whatever. You're going to get, you know, blame it on, well, and they got a lot of blame coming their way. Well, you're going to blame it on the teachers' union. You're going to blame it on stuff like that. Now, if you're on the left, you're going to blame it on rich people not contributing enough or else the stuff would go. You're going to find the people you're going to blame stuff on. But in fact, it's the Federal Reserve saying, right, well, okay, we poured this 40% in. We really need to pull 20% out. But if you do that, all of a sudden, I got news for you. NVIDIA is not trading at 123. Housing prices are not 411. We're not even close. Because the same thing is going to happen when you pull it out as happened when you put it in. But now, somebody like me, for instance, say who rents, all of a sudden the housing price goes from 411 to 350 or 320, where maybe it, quote, ought to be. I might go out and buy one. I'm not going to buy one at 411 because I think it's ridiculous. So now we're talking about who are you hurting and who are you helping? And people sense now that somehow or another, the government is protecting the 1%, or it's protecting people who have money in their 401k. They're not the one percenters. It's protecting the asset owners versus other people. And I don't think most of them can put their finger on it, but that's really the part that they're pissed off about. Why hasn't my salary gone up 40% when the price of the damn car is up 40%, or the price of my house is up 40%? I mean, Kyle Bass was on CNBC the other day, and why they let him talk, they couldn't wait to get him off. He was talking about, because we got a government that tells you the price of rent is up 15%, and the FHA is telling you it's up 60 or 55. He goes, how long are we going to believe this crap? You know, they don't normally have anybody that on TV. He goes, these numbers are unconscionable, and that's why people are mad. And it's and now Trump is going to, evidently at his first debate, is going to light into this guy about the inflation. Well, if Biden had any, I won't say if he had any comprehension, I'm sure he does, but he's going to say, hey, these are the inflation numbers, lies. When I was in there, these are the inflation numbers when you were in there, lies. Guess what? Yours are worse than mine. You know, I mean, something that, how one of these guys could accuse the other on inflation, I can't even imagine. Yet, I think we're going to hear that, aren't we?
Of course. This is, you know, it's this institutional kind of lock on the lying, where it transcends party, it transcends election cycles. So the crazy numbers that they expect people to, you know, plan, you know, make plans based on, is going to continue no matter who is in there. And it's this is what I think has put us into some uncharted territory now, where the system has caused distrust such that no change in executive is going to make any difference. I mean, there can't be a big enough house cleaning, no matter who gets in, to fix what's been, you know, getting more and more wrong every year, pretty much. And, you know, if nobody trusts the, you know, BLS statistics anymore, if nobody really trusts the inflation numbers, if you can't trust, you know, the news that's coming out of, you know, government agencies, if you can't trust the media, people feel that, you know, it's we're just, you know, greeting a bunch of vigilantes who are, you know, wronged in so many ways by a system that doesn't respond to the kinds of anger that people are feeling. And this is very much like what happened in the 20s and 30s. That's the side of the Depression that people don't really talk about too much.
Except that the history of it, Jen, doesn't mention any. They don't mention the massive Nazi rallies in Madison Square Garden. They don't mention the communist rallies that Armin Hammer's dad went to and got arrested for.
Right.
So you're not, they don't mention any of that. We've erased that from history.
And, you know, the complexion of the Chicago City Council, just as a microcosm, where there's, you know, a credible number of socialists, you know, some who make, you know, kind of fudge the question of whether they're socialists or not, but there's enough who have freely admitted that they are a voting bloc, and they tend to kind of hang together on issues where there's, you know, there's something that they can pin their, you know loyalties on. But that's a precursor of what happened in the 30s, where the same thing happened in Congress. It happened in a lot of small, you know, town politics, the Huey Long phenomenon. All this is, you know, in the history books, but politicians don't like people to know about it, because it shows that in desperate times, people do desperate things. They vote desperately, too. And when you start hating the people who are opposed to you, this is what foments, you know, civil wars and revolutions, and we seem to be very, you know, susceptible to these kinds of allurements now, where people are blaming, you know, somebody. They have to blame somebody, and they blame the people who are living next door to them, or across town, or, you know, the coastal states, or whatever. And this is, you know, a recipe for total disaster.
But Jan, when you say people are blaming people, there's blame to go around.
Of course.
I mean, Carl obviously likes to be out on the edge in that, but, and people say, God, you know, Carl's, you know, off the deep end or something. The thing of it is I'm gonna agree with Carl on maybe not necessarily where we are on the chain here, but at some point, it becomes very personal. And I think a lot of places were there. I mean, take my stupid economic story here, which isn't all that stupid. Okay, the Fed puts 40% of money in. They make this huge change in how much stuff costs for people, automobiles, houses, rent. And, oh, by the way, maybe some people are getting a raise and maybe they're not. And all of a sudden, if I had five kids, I'm going to say, God, none of my kids can never afford a car or a house now. Well, hell, bleep. And on the Fed, anybody with a third grade education would say, well, you put way too much money in. Let's take some of it out and even this out for people, for God's sake. Oh, no, I can't do that because the stock market will go down. Or the guy who just shoved money in my pocket, his house on Long Island is going to go down. They right now are making a very personal calculation. These people are more important than my kids, if I had them. I mean, it's hard to be important to my kids when I don't have them, but you know what I'm saying? That to me, we're way out on a chain here. That is a very conscious discussion is, no, I'm going to prefer this group of people, this 5%, plus maybe other people that have the 401ks and stuff, I'm going to prefer them over your grandkid or something. Now, that's not just an oopsie. That is a very serious type of thing. I mean, when you talk about what's happening in the medical situation, you know, if, for instance, as is being alleged now in some places, when people are participating on their medical expenses, and you're going to, you know, some people are paying 15% of the bill, if they're getting a different bill than the hospital's getting, John, I'm not so sure that is an absolute stealing. That's pretty damn personal. We're not talking about some policy that we're raising, you know, the tax on parking half a buck or something. I guess it's a little personal that you're taxing people that drive versus those that take the train, but it's not the same level where you're changing. These guys have absolutely changed people's lifestyle and view of the future and where they're going to go and where their kids are going to go. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, to me, it's pretty friggin' personal. I mean, I can see where a lot of people would sure see it would be. Let's put it that way.
Well, and there should be, in all of this, there should be some kind of, you know, backing off on the, you know, let's look at what we do in the larger, you know, political sphere. With the money that we've thrown into the Ukraine conflict, or the Gaza-Israel conflict, or you name it, where you know no Americans can see themselves benefiting from that, other than having to commit some of their life's blood, you know, when people are drafted into service to fight these crazy wars. It's bad enough on the home front where you got people feeling like they've been victimized by people who are taking advantage of them and destroying the family's futures and kicking them out of homes and everything else. But when they see this money being thrown all over the globe to make somebody wealthy, and it's certainly not anybody in most people's families here, you got a double whammy. That could be changed. I mean, that's something where I think anybody who's angry at the way money has been wasted here can see that throwing money that we don't have, that we have to print or steal from something else to fund any war right now is stupid for us, let alone what it may do if we back off in Ukraine or whatever else. That's somebody has to bite the bullet at some point and say, we can't do this and we need to negotiate. We need to get a better settlement now that we're going to get 6 months or a year from now and hold it Zelensky's feet to the fire and everybody else's.
Well, I would totally agree with that. I mean, somehow or another,
there's nobody saying that. Who was it? Just the other, was it Nigel Farage who said that, you know, the reason for the mess in Ukraine is because of, you know, the saber rattling by NATO? And he was just—it's just excoriating.
Yeah, I mean, you and I know that. I have had this discussion with a whole bunch. I've been doing some calculating here, John. So hold that thought for a second because I'm going to argue with you about that. Yeah. If you look at these numbers. And these numbers now, Trump is going to go flying after Biden about the inflation number. So I just, according to the CPI calculator, from January 1st of 2017, when the Donald became emperor, or whatever he likes to call himself, to the day he left office, guess what the CPI tells you the entire inflation is in 4 years?
8%, 9%?
8%, bingo. Now, we know that's a that's a losing lie.
Yeah.
Since Biden's been in, his whole time, guess what they have the inflation as total?
6%?
No, 20. It's been higher.
Okay. I'm just there's no limit to the lying. This is what's so stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, fighting over these lying numbers.
So they've got the total number is like 28% from 2020 to today, and I'm going to say it's got to be at least twice that. I mean, it's but here's the thing. Trump's last year in office. Now, granted, this was the COVID year. He raised the money in his spot from February 2020. Money was $15.4 trillion. All right. And by January 2021, it was 19.5. So it was up 35% in 1 year. And now he's going to blame the inflation on Biden. maybe 95% of the people in the country might believe that. I don't think you and I are going to believe that, are we, Jeff?
Well, people don't pay much attention to the numbers, Tom, anymore. You know, people I know certainly won't pay any attention to them. They know what's wrong, and they know when it started getting wrong for them. So, I mean, you can blame, you know, the run-up in COVID in that, you know, final year of the Trump administration for, the beginning of the lockdown and the crazy, monetary, just infusion of cash. But what's happened since then is, its own bag now. I think people are pretty much of a mindset that it could have been reversed. It could have been softened in some ways, and instead it was just...
Yeah, but nobody wants it. You know what the reversion is? The reversion is to go from 19 back to 16. Nobody wants that.
But, then we didn't have other stuff to draw this money out that we don't have. Now it's just been institutionalized, and it's, the irony, of course, is that we have a military that I don't think has ever been less equipped to do anything and get it right than it's ever.
We went to a different war. We've been set up when we went from 16 aircraft carriers to 10. We decided that all wars now are going to be, 2 months. Or less, because that's what the last few have been, and that's what we're going to gear up for. With the idea of having a stockpiling, 50,000 artillery shells 4 years ago, somebody looked at you like you had water on the brain, right? I mean, why do we need...
We're financing wars that are beyond 2 years now.
Well, okay, but now we're... But also, I mean, the financing... A lot of what you say, by the way, I agree with in terms of the war stuff, but Jen, Ukraine didn't. They didn't cause our interest expense here to be $900 billion a year. They didn't cause that. What we're saying is we're in such screwed up shape now we can't afford to help anybody, which could very well be true, to be honest with you. But still, our military budget is only the same as our interest, for God's sake. What caused that? It wasn't the military. I think some of it was. I mean, obviously the Iraq fiasco, with all the people that are on disability and all the other stuff, is a big chunk of the military budget, right? I mean, all those pensions, the military pensions and stuff, come out of the defense budget, correct?
Right.
So the Iraq fiasco cost us. I mean, at the time, somebody wrote up an article. I still have it somewhere. He said this thing's going to cost $1.5 trillion by the time it plays out, and we take care of people and stuff.
What nobody will talk about or even want to consider, Tom, is how somebody somewhere made a ton of money off of this.
People always do. The question is how much. I mean, if you made PT boat engines during World War II, and maybe you cheated 5% or 10% on the price, and oh, by the way, you spent the money in the local bar restaurant and those kinds of things. There's a hurt there, but there's not a, you spent the money some other place, it came back in taxation. I mean, it's a problem, but it's not a massive problem. it's not the same as spending, you know, $12 billion for a weapons program. Then all of a sudden, since everybody's using drones, you can't even use the damn things, right? It's not the same at all, is it?
Right.
I mean, you're right. There's no question of what some of the stuff. I think people, and I'm trying not to be bloodthirsty on this, but some people would rather have, if Putin's got this land grab mentality, some people, and I'm not including myself in here, would rather have the Ukrainians fighting him than us. You know, it's cheaper to give those guys artillery shells. You know, I don't want to say to kill Russians, but I mean, if that's what the guy plans on doing, if Ukraine was just first, I think Poland is real happy, and so is Latvia and Lithuania, that they're bogged down in Ukraine, don't you?
Well, there's thinking in the State Department that this is, you know, something we should be doing and doing indefinitely, it seems. And, you know, I don't buy that.
Well, I mean, I'm sure the Russians were happy as clams and we were bogged down in Afghanistan.
Well, yeah. And you know, we use that as the model, you know, with and supported Saddam Hussein, you know, to get at the Soviets. So, you know,
he was our, what did Harry Truman say? He's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch. I mean, at least he was a buffer against Iran for a while. I mean, well, look at the war they fought against Iran. How many people died in that? At least I just said that. I mean, they lost. How many people died in that war, for God's sake?
Well, you don't hear about that cost in any of these figures either.
Right. But I mean, weren't a lot of people happy it was them, not us?
Of course.
And how many people here would like him back? I might, actually. he was our buffer, wasn't he? We didn't like him.
Well, somebody like him anyway.
Yeah. His kids are still around, aren't they? Are they all dead?
No, I think there's some. I think.
I bet they still got dough someplace.
None of this gets figured in any of this calculus.
But it should, right?
Of course.
I mean, anyway, S&P
if there's numbers to crunch, these should be in that, you know, group of numbers. So
S&P Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures down 27. We'll come back with Audrey. John, you and Audrey do some talking on real estate. I talk too much. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at ptisecurities.com. That's ptisecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P Futures up a buck. Chuck, NASDAQ Futures down 36. Dow futures are actually up. Huffy's up 108. A lot of that's IBM up 224. But the Dow has been up and down pretty more violent than the rest. Now remember, the Dow is a price-weighted index, so it's not the same way you calculate it. Over in Europe, these guys were up. They're still up. DAX up 97.5%. They were up like 120. FTSE up 35.4%. CAC around up 62.8%. Again, those guys have made back a lot of what they lost when the election went the wrong way and they decided they're going to disband Parliament and stuff. So maybe we'll get a read on that tomorrow, maybe. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 208.5%. Hang Seng down 81 cents. Let's call that one flat. Shanghai, however, down 35. It's 1.2%, under 3,000. 29.63. So much for the rally over there. It's kind of ended. Friday, Dow was up 15, S&P down 8, NASDAQ down 32. Bonds up 1 basis point, kind of across the board. 4.27 here, 2.42 on the Bund, and 0.99 on the Japan. Oil up 19 cents, 80.92. Brent up 19 cents, 85.43. Natural gas down a penny, 2.69. RBOB unchanged at 2.50. RBOB's been at 2.50 for a while. Even though our prices here are up 40 cents in the last 2 weeks, not sure exactly how that works. Gold up 470, 23.35. Silver up 2 cents, 29.63. Copper down 2 cents, 4.41. Foreign exchange, dollar is a little weaker. As the euro's up to 127.3. It was under 107. British pound, 126.7. We've got Bitcoin, whack, 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 down 28.91. 61,200. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Yeah, good morning. It is currently 7:37 a.m. on June 24th, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, we're looking at 74 degrees this morning, mostly sunny skies with a high of 82 degrees today. Tonight, we can see a thunderstorm with possible hail and damaging winds that'll be more towards dawn. As far as what's going on down in Phoenix, we have 91 degrees right now, sunny to partly skies, and a high of 110 degrees, yikes, down there in Phoenix today. Over in sports in the MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to Tigers 11-2, as well as that, Cubs lost their home game against the Mets. Final score was 5-2. Tonight, Sox are back with Dodgers at 7:10, and Cubs will play San Francisco Giants at 8:45. In the WNBA, Chicago Sky played Indiana Fever. That was the game with Caitlin Clark here in Chicago. Sky took home the win with a close final score of 88-87. And of course, the NHL Stanley Cup Final takes place tonight. Game 7 with the Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers. That'll be the series tied up 3-3. Tonight will be the tiebreaker for the series. We'll see how that goes. Now back over to you, Chief.
We have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Hey, Aud. Are you with us?
Oh, she just left.
She just left. Where did she go?
She'll be back.
Jan, how come people in Illinois aren't more pissed off about these gas prices compared to other places?
Yeah, I guess they bit the bullet and decided not to drive.
I was listening to some guy yesterday talking about how gas prices are so much cheaper than last year, and I'm thinking, what is this guy smoking? Evidently, in the whole southern states, it's under $3. And here in the burbs, it's 4.05, and in the city, it's 5.
Yeah, well, it was 4.49 at the Shell station near me I saw the other day, which I thought was, wow, that's an improvement.
Yeah, the guy in North and Elston in North, he prides himself on being the highest in the city. I think he's 4.99. If he's not the highest, he's, because all the you know, people from like the Gold Coast and stuff go flying down there and pay anything and just hop on the expressway. But well, what's some of the premiums, like what, 5.10 or something?
Oh, yeah, diesel is like God.
Yeah. But, yeah, Audrey was just up in Wisconsin. She said it was 3.05 up there. Well, the taxes here are what, 96 cents now a gallon?
Yeah.
It's 97.
At least we got a lot to show for it, Tom.
Oh, yeah, we got a lot to show for it. A lot of no potholes, no construction. You know, everything goes fast. I mean, we got it all figured out. I got a question. Well, Audrey's trying to get her way back here. I assume she is. I'm looking at this. I don't want to go crazy on this Hey Jackass, but for those that don't know, Hey Jackass keeps a daily toll of people who got killed in the city here and where they got killed and so forth and what time. And they always have, just on the weekends, which is when most people used to get shot, they have like kind of an hour-to-hour thing going on. But I have a question. Is June is going to be one of the worst months ever? Juneteenth was what? Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Well, the 17th would be a Monday, correct?
Right.
And they don't give you the you know, I was going to say the blow-by-blow, the shot-by-shot.
40 people got shot on that Monday, John. Way more than any weekend day, like all year. What happened that Monday? I didn't hear anything about that.
Well, you have any idea? There were several, you know, mass shooting events in the wee hours of Monday morning. And I'm trying to remember the exact, you know, locations for them, but I think it was a total of something like 12 or 13 people in those two incidents alone.
Now, those aren't listed because it's a Monday, yeah, individually.
Yeah, it's not part of the weekend count.
I'm sitting here looking at this, I'm going, what weekend day was that? And I'm thinking the 17th, that's a Monday. How do you shoot 40 people on a Monday? But obviously we did.
I think that the tally this weekend so far is 36 shot, 9 killed or something. And I think the only reason it came down a little is because, you know, it rained so hard, you know, late Saturday night and Sunday morning, that a lot of people were kept indoors.
But, we had a rain delay.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's what they call it here on AJAC, yes. But, I mean, these are all in the daylight. I guess you can shoot people.
I have to laugh because I don't want to cry on the air, Tom.
I know. These are all in broad daylight now. I guess you can shoot better. But what is our plan on this? I mean, I had a discussion with my nephew yesterday, and you know, he's on the liberal side of stuff, but and I understand where he's coming from. I said, you know, why don't we have, you know, 10 squad cars and 3 National Guard things. Now, National Guard's another issue, but on the 31st Street Beach every night. Does somebody get shot there like every night? What is the deal there?
Two fatalities Friday night.
Yeah. The parks are all closed, allegedly. This is in the middle of the night. Nobody's supposed to be there. If there's these big gatherings of people, what do they drive over and start shooting each other? I mean, I don't get the mentality at all. I mean, man, we still haven't found Audrey?
Still trying to get a hold of her, yeah.
All right. We'll call her on her phone, see if she's what's going on.
Sounds good.
When I do the show, Jan, and everybody, all the different people we have all come from different directions, right? And a lot of people write in and so forth. The thing that absolutely befuddles me is the disparity in, not disparity, well, I guess it is a disparity, in people's outlook on the future. Maybe people don't sit down and actually talk about it. I mean, when I talk about somebody giving a massive contract to a Major League Baseball or football player, I'll sit there and go, okay, now here's the contract. It sounds like a lot of dough, which is fine. I feel good for the player and, you know, whatever. The guy takes a huge hit on his life. All you have to do is go to our reunion and see the people walking around to play pro football, and they don't walk like the rest of the people, do they? I mean, it's not like a big price wasn't paid for the millions of dollars people play in the NFL. You know, probably not so much in Major League Baseball or something like that, or basketball. I mean, you're not going to come out as debilitated as you are in football, hopefully. But still, there's a price to pay. And you're at the top of the gene pool. I mean, it's pretty hard to get there. So, but then I always think of, okay, what does the owner perceive the world's going to look like 5 years from now, 4 years ago, now 8 from years now, when we got you back, Hood?
Good morning.
All right, I'll stop my sports discussion now that you're here.
No, that's okay. You guys just go right ahead. Sorry, we had technical difficulties here.
Well, I was just saying, one of the reasons why, as you know, because you talk to me all the time, I like doing the show is because the disparity in views, whether people even think they thought it out or not, and it's one of the things I want to talk about with you on the show. You see somebody give a huge contract like to a baseball player. Well, that owner must have some kind of view of, okay, 5 years from now, what is $20 million for an outfielder going to be like? Is the world going to be spectacular where I'm getting a bargain at that price, or is it the world going to be, you know, down the rat hole, and by the way, I can't sell a ticket anywhere near the price I'm charging today, and $20 million, I'm going to be slapping myself upside the head saying, why would I ever do such a stupid thing? I mean, and you go through that, you know, you go through that all the time. When somebody buys a house and gets essentially a 30-year mortgage, they're making a bet on the future, aren't they? And they're saying, me and my wife or the two of us or somebody, we're going to stay employed, we're going to do better, we can barely afford this, so we plan on getting getting promotions, getting raises, and the world being good for us. I mean, people have this view, right? I mean, all the time, and the views don't match. I mean, for everybody leaving Chicago, not everybody, for everybody leaving Chicago, there's a guy building a $2.5 million house. I mean, they sure don't match, do they?
Well, everybody has their own view of what the world should look like, but, you know, since man crawled, you know, was started living in caves, you have a home. So that's the thing is, it's different is that, A, you have to live somewhere if you're not going to be in the cave. And the other thing is that a home is just not an investment. An investment came later in life. I believe when you grew up, and this is since families were formed, you got up, you had a family, you separated from your family, and you raised your own family. And that's true of people and animals. Most mammals go out, raise a family, and they raise a family. So you have two things. You have the natural instinct to create shelter for a family. And later on, I think the investment came. So first is a home, established a home for your family or yourself, however that is, and then it became an investment much later in life. I don't think that became a thing until maybe the 70s or 80s, where you also bought it for an investment. Before you bought it because you needed shelter. So I think there's two things going on.
Well, you weren't that much, if you go back 50, 60 years or before that, there wasn't that much difference in the return of whether you bought a place or whether you rented it. That we were kind of talking about earlier in the show, what is how, because of a lot of what the Fed is doing, the split between renters and owners has been so dramatic in the last 25 years. It's like, for God's sake, you know, how did that happen, right?
Well, that happened again for a lot of social reasons. And you can go back almost to the 60s and 70s for that one. Birth control became available when women started delaying families or became not a social stigma to have a child. So you have different types of homes that were established, which again, I would just say it's much social as an economic, and they did not become saying, wow, I'm going to buy this house in Oak Brook. I'm pretty sure darn sure it's going to increase in value by the time I become old and want to downsize and buy a condo in Florida.
Yeah, I guess that is sort of. I mean, I knew people that rented for 50 years in New York and never felt they were behind the times, and all of a sudden, boy, the last 25 years, they'd be behind the times, wouldn't they, rather than buying.
History land, at least, it has always appreciated.
Well,
wasn't Thomas Jefferson by land? They're not on town. Mark Twain, not enough coffee. By land, they're not making any more of it.
Well,
right. Do you think there's any connection between, you know, the amortization pattern that we have now and the kind of desperate situation a lot of people find themselves in? I mean, the idea of an amortized mortgage, meaning you get 20 years, 30 years to pay it off, is relatively new. Up until the Depression, you make like quarterly payments, and then after 3 years, you had to either refinance it somehow or pay the thing off and you were done with it. Well, you know, after the Depression, the 20-year mortgage became the baby boomer emblem, you know, because housing prices were such that people could, you know, we kind of pay that off by, you know, paying less than $100 a month, the decent interest rate, and get the thing paid off right on schedule after 20 years. Well, when the housing prices crept up, you know, the 30-year mortgage became kind of the norm. And, of course, then adjustable interest rates became the norm for a while, too. But is this making it harder for people to get out from under bad deals because they're tied into something that is no way going to connect with what's happening in the business world or in the stock market or in interest rates when you're looking at 30 years versus 4 years as it was, say, around World War One, or 20 years as it was, you know, until the 1980s or 90s. Are people kind of suffering from making this long commitment to paying off a mortgage when their circumstances can change so drastically within those 30 years?
Absolutely, that's a great point. And it happened too, because people, as you said, have gotten used to it. But there's, of course, several books out on it that people, when one guy advised the way to attain wealth, pay your house off, however you look at it, is to look at your mortgage and divide it into how many years that you want to pay it off. So instead of the saying, I want to pay my, you know, $300,000 mortgage off in 20 years, I'm going to divide it into 5 years or 10 years and just pay it off. And if people looked at it that way, they would be so much more, save the mortgage interest payment over 30 years, which of course you pay for your house many times over that way. And anybody who's ever gone to a closing table, you get a document that is literally has every monthly payment printed out on it.
The truth in lending, my God.
Yeah, so you get that, and that always is a sobering moment for most people when they realize you're making that payment every month. But most people don't now believe that they're going to pay their house off. Now, that's changed since in the last maybe four years. Let's say three, that people expected to move every 5 to 7 years. That was becoming the statistical norm.
Well, there were a lot of companies that had that as a policy. They're going to move you every 5 years.
You were transferring.
Yeah.
But now it's become more that you are buying a house with the idea that you might be staying there for a long time, if not your forever house. It's a very different view, especially with the younger kids.
Well, what do you suppose, and we have not broached this subject forever, you know, we talk about it on every other subject. I think what government put a massive difference where they benefited home ownership when they made the interest tax deductible, which now with the Trump tax thing is not always tax deductible, but it was. I mean, your rent was not tax deductible, but your mortgage interest was. So anybody who has a third grade education, do they teach economics in third grade, Jen, or what? I don't know. Is going to tell you just drove the price of housing up, right?
Right.
I mean,
you made it more sensible to buy into the notion of the mortgage.
Right.
And borrow more in the process.
Right. Yeah. And then it made it more, and since your rent wasn't deductible, yet when you, like Audrey just said very intelligently, if somebody looks at the table, the first, 5 years, odd. You're drawing your house down, $1 a month or something, or $10 a month. So really, your rent is the interest, which is tax deductible, but if you paid rent, it's not.
Right.
I mean, it's as insane as, you know, if PTI buys insurance for our employees, it's tax deductible. If you buy it for yourself, it's not. I mean, why people put up with this over long periods of time? Again, I'm not looking for people to get their musket, but for God's sake, isn't it nuts, guys? I mean, it's crazy.
Well, what amazes me as much as a house is, look at a car. Car used to be, you bought a car, and maybe if you bought a car, when I bought my first one, it was a year, 2 years to pay the car off. Now, but a car is the price of a can't. Let's say it's not even exorbitant to have a $75,000 car anymore. I mean, $50,000 is... I would say 40 to 50,000 is not a.
Well, 40 is the average. You know, 40 is the average. Yeah, 40 is the average.
Yeah. So if you buy a nice car, and to me, you know, then you're talking maybe a nice Cadillac. You're buying a BMW. You're buying a big truck. You got a $75,000 to $150,000 payment for a middle class person. So now you've got car payments that are 5, 6, 7 years with much higher interest rates unless you're a business person, that's not tax deductible.
John, did she just tell me that if I ever bought her a car, it better be a Cadillac or a BMW?
Well, you got to disguise the message.
I heartily endorse that.
So, you don't want me to show up with some stinking Ford for you? Actually, because
I like nice cars.
I know, but not only that, I'll give her this because she's always driving around clients and everything. Well, it needs a nice car and deserves one. I mean, I'd buy you a Cadillac long before I'd buy myself one because I don't need one. But you do. That's your business, right?
Yes.
I mean, you need a car like I need two or three computers with a million stocks on the screen, right? I mean, it's...
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, you don't want to show...
Watching that curb to see what pulls up.
Absolutely. I mean, you know... They want it clean, they want it nice, and people are in there all the time. And you pay a lot of insurance for that, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's your stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's all about people's view. I mean, it's Jan, you were mentioning, went back in history, It's timing is everything. I mean, my dad died young. My mother married my stepfather, and they bought this bungalow. People know what the hell it is. And I think it was 18.5 or something. Of course, my mother, even though she was a single mom for 3 years, managed to save up the down payment. My stepfather being a regular guy, but he had a good job. And every year he got a better job, better job, better job. And I'm going to say by 1962, because in those days the inflation rate was probably 3 or 1, 2, I'm saying, and people got a 3 or 4% raise. In terms of economics, there's probably never any better time. I mean, you didn't want to be sick or anything like that back then, but between, I'm going to say, 1951 and 1970, is there ever a better time to be a regular person economically?
No.
It was your greatest generation building the world.
Yeah, and I'm going to say people's return and salary increase was probably 3.5% a year, and your inflation rate was probably 1.5, 2. So I'm going
to
say
all the factories were in town, and people walked to or took the bus to work, and everybody worked locally, and everybody was happy.
The people used to jam on the Archer bus, but I'm going to say in 4 years, that mortgage, you know, which they were hard pressed to get, was probably half of one of his two paychecks a month.
Well, I can tell you my parents bought their house in Brighton Park with help from my mother's sister for the down payment, because the house was a grand total of $8,000. And she had to borrow like $2,000 from her sister. But she and my dad paid the house off and paid my aunt back in like 5 years, which was a lot of money back then.
Hey, we just got this is interesting. You guys probably both noticed. I did not. We just got a text from my buddy Jimmy, who was on the show with us one time. He's works for a mortgage place, and the guy knows all the mortgage rules for all 50 states. Really a knowledge of it. Interesting. Short-term balloon loans were among the most common mortgages in use before 1930. They usually lasted for a short time, such as from 3 to 5 years, were written for no more than 60% of the property value. It required only interest payments during the life of the contract. Then you either get another one or you had to pay the rest of it off. Is that... That is the way I've read about it. You guys remember that?
Yeah. Absolutely. I used, during the 70s and 80s, balloon payments were very common in real estate because nobody could get a regular mortgage, and people were writing contract loans with balloon payments when interest rates were, 12, 15, 18%. They were writing balloon payments so that the average person could buy their house and then hopefully refinance it at the end of that balloon period. So that is something that I don't think anybody in these last few generations has seen. But it was common at that time because they were owners were financing below the current rate.
Right.
Well, I would like to see. Go ahead, John.
It made it so that, some stories my dad told me about his father's, generation and his grandfather's generation. They had a balloon payment on a home in Aurora that they bought in the 1890s, and everybody who was working, sent home a certain amount of money every month so that they could overpay the mortgage and get rid of the thing faster. And then it became a kind of, proving to yourself how frugal you could be for those first couple of years of home ownership, that you wanted to get rid of the scourge of a mortgage as fast as you could. So you probably, scrimped and saved food and everything else in the process to be out from under it. And they paid off the thing in the house in Aurora in like 2 years or something. And we're always proud of it and always talked about it. So it made people kind of want to do something in the short term that they could never have justified maybe over the long term. And that's really to go light on clothing and leisure expenses and everything else to get rid of this mortgage. Now everybody just coasts for 30 years, and if times get rough, they try to refinance and drag it out a little farther. I don't know if that's any healthier or the cause of any more happiness for people.
Well,
I agree. Well, it used to be a celebration to burn your mortgage.
Yes. Yeah, the party, ripping up the mortgage.
Well, what's the, even today with the housing prices, if you get a 30-year mortgage and you send them $150 or $200 a month more, all of a sudden your 30-year mortgage becomes like, $26 or $25? I mean,
it cuts 8 years off your mortgage.
Yeah, it cuts
like a bunch. Like if you send in one extra monthly payment a year, whether you divide it by 12 or send one monthly payment in, that will knock off about 8 years.
All right, we got like 1 minute left. What's the status of the situation? Nancy last week said kind of status quo, still not very many houses for sale, but you've got some, and you've done a couple empty lots lately, and your stuff is word of mouth. Everybody likes you, and they call you up.
It's still busy, and their listings have ticked up in the MLS in the last couple weeks. So there's a few more listings. Desire is still out there. People are still looking. So yeah, it's a decent market, and actually, interest rates I've seen have ticked under 7 last week. So this has been the lowest they've been for a while. So we'll see what happens.
Why don't you plunk Flanny in that $1 million house in Palos you showed me? That place was pretty nice. You had the cement pond. You were right on a lake. You could fish there, Jan. Big swimming house. We could turn it into a bar. I mean,
a billiard table with the pot pushers.
Without a doubt. I mean, why don't you put Jan in there? He's got the dough.
No, too late. It's sold.
Really?
Oh, congratulations.
I'll tell you what, Jan. She sent me this thing, and I don't usually have house envy. The thing was listed for like $988. I don't think you could have built that thing today for anything less than 2.25. Could you, Lloyd?
Oh, of course. No, yeah.
The land was gorgeous. You have your, practically a private lake with three people and your own pool and a big house. And hey, close the gate and enjoy life.
I could have 10 people over. If they all got too drunk, they just there was room for everybody.
Yep, absolutely.
What does it cost to put a big
Never
pool?
Never happens at my parties.
No, what happens to a... What does it cost to put a big pool like that in now?
Oh my God, $100,000, I would say. Tiny nothing pool is 60 or 70, but probably a minimum of 100 now.
Well, that thing was pretty nice. Then there's the up. Well, Jan, maybe one of these days, but you could have been. I tell you what, you could have had us all over. I'd have cooked. I'd cook out. Anyway, thank you guys.
Shameless bid for an invitation.
Yeah, shameless plug for an invitation. I'll even bring the ribs, for God's sake. SP Futures down 2, NASDAQ Futures down 50. Thanks, guys. Good job, Matt. Back next week, Stocks and Jocks. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.